I'm Lauren.
And I'm Ashley. And this, guys, is Nip Tuck Pod.
We are your girl chat. We say the things you want to hear, the things that you're thinking but you don't want to say out loud. And we're all about being strong, aspirational women who basically don't give a...
Lauren, anyway, if you want unfiltered chat, amazing beauty and product recommendations, then look no further, guys. This is the podcast where you will get all of the girly chat.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Vicky Patterson, The Secret 2. This week, I'm joined by none other than Mr. Showbiz himself. It's TV's Richard Arnold, everybody.
Hey, cue the slow clap, Vicky. Cue the slow clap.
In the absence of a studio audience, I like to G up my guests.
Yeah, bless you. I am suitably G'd, my love. Suitably G'd. And it's lovely to see you, because this is quite a change in dynamic, isn't it? Because our paths have crossed over the years many times. And I would be doing the interviewing. So it's a real privilege to have the tables turned, so to speak. And can I compliment you on your kitchen? It's so tidy and the plants are beautiful. My editor, Neil, here at Good Morning Britain, gave me a bonsai for Christmas. And I thought, Neil, I said, not only am I the sole breadwinner, not only am I looking after my elderly mother, now you've given me a bonsai, which is one of those plants that needs to be misted every morning.
It's a very precious plant, isn't it, the old bonsai?
Oh. And I feel like, you know, it's like that scene from E.T. Every time I go down in the kitchen in the morning, and if there's a leaf dropped, I feel, you know, guilty for the rest of the day. But anyway, you look very fragrant. Your kitchen looks very fragrant, and it certainly doesn't need a J cloth around it. So I compliment you on that.
You're so sweet, but like, I'll absolutely let you in on a secret, mate, is that I tidy the very small section that you can see, and the rest is just complete chaos, honestly. And I couldn't keep a plant alive either, mate. Like, I struggle to keep myself alive most days. So you're in good company.
Great stuff, mate. Great stuff.
How do you actually, that's a really good question then. Obviously, you're wearing a different hat today. How do you feel when the shoe's on the other foot? Like, are you a bit of a control freak, or do you just totally relax and think, oh, it's just nice to not think?
I think what I love is, and it's rather what I like about interviewing as well. I mean, being the subject of an interview, like we've established, is a different sort of feeling. It reminds me of like when you go into a studio and you're not wearing an earpiece. I'm so used to having done live television for so many years that when you go into a studio, for example, if you're on something like The Chase or one of those quiz shows like Tipping Point, and you're doing the celebrity version thereof, and you don't have an earpiece, you feel really untethered because you don't know what's going on. So in a studio environment, yes, I like to be in control because I like to DJ it and, you know, throw ahead and be in control of all the various elements. There's no doubt about that. That's a different discipline. But in terms of a bit of banter, I'm all up for it. And I think like a lot of people, Vicky, like, during COVID in particular, obviously, we all took to Zoom and we all took to these lengthy chats, be it with mates or, you know, people in the industry and stuff when we were doing interviews. And I loved it. And I found there was a real intimacy about it. That's why I love podcasts. It's why I love The Sidebar, you know, my new podcast with my sidekicks, if you like, is I started off in radio and I just love the chat, and I love the chat to be unfettered. I love the chat to be authentic. And I remember interviewing quite a few big names from my shed, which they dubbed Dickie's Den back in the days of COVID. And I'd poodle down to the back of the garden in all elements, Vicky, and I'd interview everybody from, you know, your Dolly Partons, Gloria Estefan, whatever. I know. I mean, pick up these names and feel free to. But it was very surreal being in your own shed, having a cheeky little glass on the side because of the time difference, obviously, and interviewing the likes of these people. And I found that the big names gave more of themselves funnily enough, than they would do if you were in the room. And I think it's because perhaps they were also rather like you in your very fragrant kitchen. They were in their own space. So they chatted and they opened the book a bit further, if you like. I think Gloria Estefan was in my house during COVID more often than I was, mate.
Oh, my God. Now, that is a statement, mate. Yeah. I think you're so right. Like, I've always found, when I'm being, you know, interviewed and stuff, like when I'm in a studio space, like there's an element of nerves, like you're dressed up all nice, you've got your makeup on, like you definitely feel like you're at work. Yet when you're doing a podcast, like the sort of relaxed environment does encourage you to open up and also let something slip that you potentially shouldn't. Did any of your guests let anything slip that they shouldn't? Or you dying?
I think like so many people during COVID as well, you within the first sort of 5 or 6 minutes of the interview, you'd be painfully, rather like I did with you, forensically analysing your kitchen. I'd be looking at the backdrop and I'm thinking, oh, where's Dolly put that? You know, where's Gloria sitting? Well, obviously, Gloria's got an entire estate. So she had a nice little cubbyhole to broadcast from. But yeah, you look at those sort of elements. And I think it's those things that sort of not betray the subject, but they give you another insight into the subject. So case in point, this is my dressing room here at Television Centre, which they've kindly given me for the day. And this piece of fan art behind me, which if you put any images up on socials, which I'm sure you will, the fan art behind me was painted by a woman when we went on the road one summer for a couple of weeks for Good Morning Britain. And I thought, you know what? It's hung with irony because I'm not really one to surround myself with images of myself. But there was such a lot of effort in it that I thought, I've got to hang it because it, there's such dedication in that. So I don't surround myself with pictures of myself, but you know, if you were looking,
I think
at
you're protesting
first time,
a lot there,
Richard. I know that there is an element of that. There is an element of that. I mean, there's a couple of pictures behind the laptop here of me with various stars, but I'm very lucky to have met them. But I suppose, yeah, I think you're right. It's a very good point. And I do feel comfortable chatting, and particularly with someone like yourself who I've met, it goes without saying, and I've met so many people over the years and from all walks of life as well, and not just famous, obviously. And it's a real privilege just to sort of hear their story. I think everyone, it's a cliche, I know, but you know, there's empirical evidence to support it. Every person has a story worth listening to. And if you ask the right questions and give them the space, they'll tell you your story. And that's what you're doing with me today, rather generously. So thank you for that.
But that's what I think makes you like perfect for your job and a really good interviewer, because you do believe that you are genuinely invested and interested in what a person has to say. And I think that shines through when a person is disinterested or feels like they're more important than someone else or is just not invested, you know, you can spot it a mile off. But every time I watch you, I think he is buzzing about this. Like he's genuinely, he really wants to hear what they've got to say. And subsequently, you as a listener are really invested too. So hats off to you, mate.
You know what? Thanks, mate. I'll take the compliment, but I am generally still giddy about my job after all these years and it's meeting people, as I say, from all walks of life. And I think I probably get it from my mum.
Is she a nosy Parker as well?
You know what? She's not really a net twitcher, but she is very much invested in other people's stories. And she worked in various retail jobs all her life before she retired about sort of 7 years ago. It's 79, you know, and she loved being front of house. She ended her sort of working career, if you like, in a kitchen shop. And she used to love that. She still speaks to a lot of the people that she worked with back then. And my mum's a sort of mum as well. When we go out, like we went out for Mother's Day, and unfortunately she's not as mobile as she used to be. So hence the reason I take care of her on a daily basis, and which I'm very lucky to do because I have a job that's quite flexible. And also she's very close to me. And I know not everybody can do that. But we took her out for Mother's Day in the wheelchair and stuff. And bless her heart, she loved it. And she chats to, you know, like the young lad and young lass who were waiting on the table and stuff. She would have them sit down at the table. You know, she gets so invested in them. And I'm like, mum, lad, he's got a job to do, you know, and he's got other tables. There are other people here. But she does it on trains as well. You know, like when I get on a Rattler, sometimes it's headphones or earplugs in and I just nod off. If a plane is taxiing, I don't know whether it's because of the early hours I work, but or a train is taking out, you know, rattling out the station, I nod off in about 20 minutes. I have no problem.
I'm the same. Nothing.
But mum will draw everybody in, and before you know it, we've got a crowd. And you know, maybe that's where I get it from. I thank her for that, because obviously it served me in good stead.
Certainly has. Well, he got it from his mama. I wanted to go right back to the start with you, Richard. And of course you are, in fact, Mr. Showbiz. But how did your journey into the world of entertainment actually begin?
Well, Vicky, it was really by accident, mate. I started off...
I love that. It's meant to be when it's like that.
Totally by accident. I mean, my mother was one when she was growing up of having, you know, cutting out movie star posters and putting them on the wall and stuff like that. And I always enjoyed Mattelli. And I loved all those 80s shows that I grew up with and stuff. And unfortunately, I've met a lot of the stars of those in, over the years as well, which is great. But I did enjoy school. I loved school. And I jumped through enough hoops academically to qualify to go to university. So I went to university, but it's the late 80s, Vicky. And people sort of pushed you towards vocational degrees there. I mean, my careers advisor said, I reckon you'd make a good lab technician. I'm like, girl, I can't wear white. It drains me and it makes me look like a drinker. So I said, you know, I can't have my florid veins popping wearing a white coat in a lab. I need
That's the last place I could see you was in a lab.
I know. Oh. So my point being is you were either a doctor or a lawyer if you had the qualifications. So I ended up going to Edinburgh University to do law. And within about 6 weeks, mate, it was not a happy place for me. I really was not a natural home. So I switched to English language and literature, which was a lot better, you know, a lot more scope for being creative. But it was during the Edinburgh festivals that I worked, stuffing envelopes to begin with, then as working in the box office and eventually sort of, you know, comparing at various venues. And that's where I got to meet a lot of people like the late, great Paul O'Grady and the likes of Steve Coogan and Paul Merton and people who were sort of starting careers back then. So that kind of wet my whistle for, you know, all things theatrical, if you like, I suppose. And then it was a friend of mine who suggested that I do a little telly review on BBC Radio Scotland. She was a producer at the time. She was a wee bit older than me. And I did it on a radio show that was hosted by my good friend, Eddie Mayer. And that's how it sort of started, really. I got a reputation rather like now, Vicky, of sort of being able to fill a bit of dead air. Because you and I are both gobs on sticks, right, ultimately. We love a bit of chat. So and that just turned into a living quite by accident. I came down to London, did a postgraduate in journalism, which might come as a shock to people who see me daily on Good Morning Britain, that I am actually qualified of sorts. And it sort of snowballed from there, really. And then in 1995, to cut a very long story short, I was offered the chance to be on a BBC Two youth show called The Sunday Show. So if you can imagine the weird, where everybody was partying on a Friday, we got everybody hungover on a Sunday. So we had to raise a titter up against that. And they called me Soapy Dick. And Soapy Dick is a name that can stick, believe me, and it has done for years. Soapy Dick, I know, Vicky, and I was called Soapy Dick because I was providing every week on the Sunday show an irreverent look at the week's soaps, but pretending that the people were real. So I would report on it like it was a news story, you know?
Oh, Mike, I love that angle. Oh, mate. I think that's clever.
And you know what, Vicky? It was terrifying because there was no sort of auto cue as such. It was live, and I think that's why that baptism of fire perhaps has served me well, and doing that radio before was a bit of prep, because as we both know, Vicky, you're paid for when it goes wrong, not for when it goes right. But it was the most nerve-wracking experience. But once you've sort of done that, you sort of you feel like you've earned your stripes a bit. Yeah. And that's a confidence that, you know, as well, that you build up over time and over years. You know, it isn't given to you, and neither would you want it to be given to you, because you want to feel competent enough because you have earned it. You want to feel secure enough that you know that you're good at doing your job. But yeah, so quite by accident, Vicky, honestly, quite by accident.
I mean, you said by accident, you've said luck, you've said chance, you've said all these things, but actually when you tell your story, I see a man who, like, yes, there are certain occasions where you've fallen into it, but you've hustled, you're driven, you've worked circuits, you like getting the postgrad journalism degree. Like, I think that's a stroke of sheer brilliance, because look where you've ended up. So I was wondering if you had any advice to anyone who is, you know, potentially wanting to move into a space like you're in. Would you say the journalism set you in good stead?
Yeah, any advice for somebody who wants my job is stay out of my light.
Yeah. Back off.
Yeah. Join the queue. I would say be yourself 150%. If a door opens, walk through it. It's a long old arc if you're lucky. So maybe slow and steady wins the race. Another cliche. But yeah, don't be afraid to be yourself. And I think good grace and manners is key. It's good grace and manners. And if you look back at people who've sort of lasted the course in the business. You know, clearly talent is key, but there's also a discipline to it as well. And as I say, you know, being kind, and you know, obviously you have to show your teeth sometimes, but there are ways of doing it without frothing at the mouth. You know what I mean? I always think my life advice would be, always think about the outcome that you want. So it could be, if for example a meal in a restaurant hasn't been satisfactory, you know, you obviously don't want to throw the person who's waiting on you or the chef necessarily under the bus. There are polite ways of resolving the situation. So I always think of the end result, and as work best back. You can get there with a bit of dignity and work back. Yeah. I guess so.
I think my mum, she always used to say, like, when I was in school, I was quite bright. And teachers would say she's smart, you know, she's intelligent, blah, blah, blah. And my mum said it was nice to hear her. She went, but I sort of knew. She went, I seen how hard you worked. She was like, what meant the most to me? She was like, was when teachers and like teaching assistants and stuff would say she's really kind. She helps the other students, or she's dead polite and stuff like that. And I think, I don't know, like, I think I said it at the end of my comic relief video, in a world where you can be absolutely anything, it's really important to just be brave and kind.
Yeah, it's a cliche, but everyone always remembers how, like, cliche again, I'm full of them today, aren't I? But, everyone remembers how you made them feel, not necessarily what you said. So I think that's a key thing. And through the years as well, I've been lucky enough to work with, and they're getting younger, young producers and stuff, and they always... I would argue, without exception, they would always say, you know, I loved working for you, I learned a lot from you, but also I learn a lot from them. And that's the key as well, because they come in, and especially when you've been doing not just necessarily the regular gig at Good Morning Britain, but any other sort of long running stint that you may have somewhere, someone young comes in with a fresh pair of eyes, and I learn from them and their perspective. And that makes me look better. And it ultimately makes all of us look better. And I love that energy. You know, I've been really lucky to work with some really cracking producers. And not only at this time in the morning do they make you roar with laughter, but they bring their own special talent and energy to it. And again, they bring themselves 150%. And I always say to them, I said, look, if you're having a bad morning, you can tell me and we'll get that out the way, and then we'll just do the job. You know, I think that's really important. Because you don't want to come to work thinking, oh, you know, my stomach's like ice, and you know, you don't want to see the lights on and put the key in the door and think, oh, I don't want to go through that door. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of always been my ethos, I guess, over the years.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You have got a longevity, Richard. Like, you are still really current and doing incredibly well, you know. Do you feel pressure to keep up with trends, to, you know, listen to these like younger producers and stuff? It sounds to me as though you do it with real grace and zero ego.
Oh, yeah. And also, that's another thing as well, which would be a bit of a life lesson, is never be afraid to ask a question, for example, that you don't want to hear the answer to, because, you know, criticism is always valid when it's delivered and landed with good grace and manners. I'm not going to be shy if I'm at the Brits on the red carpet and I'm looking at the crib sheet and I'm going, oh, my goodness me, the only person I can pick out the lineup is Boy George, you know, because, I mean, you know, that was my time. So, Yeah, I have to do a deep dive when I'm given a grime brief. You know what I mean? But I do the prep and I do the reading and I bring myself up to speed. And thanks to the team around me, I can do it. No man is an island. And I really do welcome a good brief.
I think that's probably my favourite thing anyone's ever said on The Secret. I do a deep dive when I get a grime brief.
Yeah, I need to.
You and me both, mate. I wouldn't have a clue. Mate.
I said this on the sidebar the other day, and I've said it once or twice on Good Morning Britain. There was a really awkward moment, and we've all had them on live TV, and you just have to style it out. And I was with lovely Kate Garraway and Ben Shepherd, obviously, who are dear friends. And I probably was feeling a bit dusty that morning because I'm on 5 days a week and the girl's got to have a bit of life, right, Vicky? So I might have been a bit vague that morning. Anyway, I did this whole item where I called the rapper 50 Cent 50%. And Kate and Ben sat on the sofa, right, mate? Sat on the sofa and they let me, like I was hanging there like I was in some kind of Roadrunner cartoon and they were about to peel my fingers off and I would fall down to the cliff and, you know, in a puff of smoke or whatever, or down at the bottom of the cliff. And it was one of those moments where I'm like, ooh. Anyway, shortly after that, Vicky, I was running through a list of acts one morning during my showbiz slot who were going to appear in summer festivals. And I said Kazabayan instead of Kasabian. I think Kate was rummaging through the scripts going, oh, he's mentioned some random country. I was like, but I do blame the ITV summer party the night before for that, all right? Yeah, we all have our moments, kids. We all have our moments, kids.
We can't always be this bright, shiny, brilliant version of ourselves.
Give me film and telly, Vic, and I'm your man. But sometimes I do struggle with music. But like I say, with a good brief, we can carry it off with a bit of aplomb. And I think also, again, it's being genuinely interested in the subject, regardless of whether or not, you know, you follow their careers closely. Case in point, I interviewed Conor McGregor recently. Now, I'm not an MA.
I bet that was interesting, though.
He was great, mate. Yeah. And it wasn't so, clearly it was more a meeting of minds than it was a meeting of physiques because he's a bit of a unit. But he was on sparkling form and it was a great little chat before St. Paddy's Day. And of course, I'm not really a big MMA follower. You know, cage fighting is not my thing necessarily. But I'm excited about his story. I'm excited about his career. You know, I can recognize the achievements like everyone else. And you're fascinated to meet someone like that, someone who's got this incredible presence on the world stage, some 47 million Instagram followers or whatever. And you sit there and you have a chat and you're chatting to the man, you're chatting to the individual, you know, regardless of their achievements or whatever, you're interested in the story. And that's what I always say to the team when we go somewhere, for example, if we're doing a live or if we're doing an interview, is remember, we're just here to tell the story. We top and tail it with our own style, but we let the subject speak and we tell the story. And once you get those elements together, and that would be a lesson for anyone, I suppose, who wants to get into broadcasting or journalism or whatever, particularly telly, in the sense that don't be overwhelmed. Just think of several elements that you want to bring out and you DJ it together. And again, that's something you learn over time. As you well know,
it's such a skill set. Like when I first started doing the podcast, like I can't even listen to me older ones, Richard, because I just absolutely cringe. Like I was like a headless chicken hoping for the best, and there was no real arc or flaw. It was all a bit mad, but now, like, I found my style, I suppose, and I've definitely learned and sort of grown as I've been doing them. I think there's something like 400 episodes in, like it's absolutely crackers. So I do think time and practice. Yeah, but
also, Vic, yeah, practice does inevitably make perfect, or even imperfect, which is equally as attractive, I think, because what you've always had, Vic, and I knew this when I first met you, is you're transparent. You're in the sense that you're authentic, and that is something that is the greatest and arguably one of the bravest things you can do in a business where you're forensically analyzed and you never know what the optics are going to be if you do something, you know, when you do walk through that door that I recommended you walk through, sometimes you'll fall and you think, oh, when is the net going to kick in? Because I'm plummeting here. We've all done that, right? Yeah. And I think that honesty and that authenticity is something that, again, you learn as you get older, is invaluable, I think. And that's why I would always encourage, as I say, people to be themselves 150%. Because at the end of the day, that's your only USP, right? Everybody, of course, their own individual. So sell it.
Be yourself, because everyone else is taken.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Is that, are you reading that on like one of those like slogans in your kitchen? You know how mums always have these, you know, hanging over the cooker.
Quarter of a day calendar or something. Yeah, no, yeah, I promise. Yeah, exactly. That was pure VP, Richard. Excuse
pure
me.
Pure VP.
I wanted to ask as well, because I feel like the demise of the magazines has been sort of something that, as you know, like a 90s child, like I've really struggled with. I miss flicking through a glossy mag and getting all my gossip from there. And whereas I'm obsessed with social media, like so many of us are, I do feel like that has been a bit of a tragedy. You worked in magazines in the 90s, and I think that must have just been such an exciting time. How was that?
It was. I mean, I was very lucky because I started off on a telly magazine called Inside Soap, and then upstairs TV Hits was being produced. And a lot of my colleagues in the industry that I've grown up with over the years went on to edit, you know, magazines like Company and Glamour. Wow. So we were all very much of an ilk, if you like, very much of a kind. And Heat magazine, which I know is a favourite of yours, Vicky.
Yes.
And, you know, it was my friend Julian, I think, who came up with the idea of circling celebrity armpits and things like that. The simplest of mechanics and, you know, and not necessarily malicious, but just having a bit of fun with it. So I know what you mean. I mean, journalism course was actually called the periodical course. There were 30 of us on it. There was a periodical course, a print course, which was for newspapers, and a broadcast course, which obviously says what it does on the tin. But can you imagine an entire course just devoted to magazine journalism? You know,
I mean, obviously that would have been my perfect course. Yeah,
but
it's a shame that something like that now there's probably not a lot of space for.
You know, it felt a bit like, if you're old enough to remember the series Press Gang, when we were doing TV Hits and Inside Soap, we all became firm friends. In fact, we all went to one of my old editors' 60th birthdays the other day, and the same gang is still together. And we just remember it really fondly because we were, you know, we were doing it on a budget, on a shoestring. You know, it was almost like reliving your pubescence again, you know, because the walls would be, you know, covered in pictures of like Take That and, you know, Robbie Williams, whatever, you know, or Boyzone, whatever, you know, the boy bands of the day were. And we'd all have our favourites, you know, a bit like I had my favourite Duran Duran member and stuff back in the day. So it was like you were reliving your youth, you know, and we were the friendly face of it as well. So there's a picture of me with my dear friend Vic, who used to edit Company magazine, and I'm godfather to her eldest son, and there's a picture of us holding a front page copy of the Sun with Robbie Williams leaving Take That with us, you know, pretending to cry and stuff. And I'm thinking, I must have been about 26 or something. You know what I mean? So it did feel like we were being paid just to have a bit of a caper, to be honest. Yeah. You know?
Like I did love that sort of golden era. And I do, there's a part of us that absolutely like wishes, you know, maybe I was sort of in the public eye a bit back then. I struggle a little bit with the growth of social media and everything and what to say and what not to say and everything. But I wonder how you feel about this. Like, journalism's obviously changed, and you know, we've gone from people having to do like investigative journalism and stings and like exciting things to actually people just popping on someone's Instagram to get the latest scoop. Yeah. Do you feel like that's a sad like sort of like advancement?
Well, it's interesting because I think and you'll know this yourself as someone in the public eye, is that, you know, Instagram I generally find is sort of, and I'm really just an observer, but who happens to be in the public eye, if you like, but I always like to think of myself as sort of edge of frame, still observing, is Instagram. I've always found personally quite a friendly community. And yes, invariably, in a good way, I would argue, it gives talent, celebrities or whatever, more control over what's released and over the narrative. Because as we know, if you work your way too far down those comments, you know, you can go to a very, very dark place, and that's not advisable for anyone at all. So they're a great source of stories in the sense that, you know, for example, I don't know, Celine Dion posted this morning, look, everybody, she's back. And then we would do that sort of story and stuff. And I think the tone, and this is something that I'm really passionate about on the sidebar, which is a bit like flicking through the magazines that you've just mentioned that you love so much, Vicky, is that on our podcast, we want it to be sort of irreverent. We want it to be fun. We want it to be the chat that you're going to be having if you're walking the dog and you meet someone or you're in the office or whatever, you know, and podcasts are great for that, as you well know. I want it to be an extension of that. Because there was a time when obviously celebrities, because I think they were inaccessible, they were clearly fated and we sort of revered them, if you like. Yeah. And then gradually as that pedestal shrunk and more platforms popped up, that celebrity in itself became diluted. And so people, they lost a little bit of respect for it. And it was like, well, if you're in the public eye, then you're fair game automatically, whether you've opened the book completely or not. And that tone has never really sat right with me at all. And I don't think it's sat right with many people, which is why I think we've sort of come almost full circle in the sense that we're a much kinder place now.
We needed to be.
And we really, really needed to be. Really needed to be. Because I'd like to think of myself as thick-skinned and been around the block a while. But, you know, there are some comments that I read that's smart. And I have to sort of talk myself back into a frame of mind where I can sort of put another step forward. Yeah. And I'm thinking, if I have to do that, and, you know, I'm not obsessed with social media, it's something that's almost a necessity in our business, having a digital presence, if you like, because it's one of the tools of the trade now. But because I guess I've straddled both camps before and after the digital age, I feel like I can reconcile both. But if I'm feeling that, you know, a certain comment might smart, and that's all I'll take, but I'll ignore all the positive ones. And I'm thinking, Richard, have a word with yourself, because you've been in this business a long time. Do you know what I mean? And you can't win them all.
There's something about it, though, like, and I understand, because you're sitting in your home when you read these comments, or you're in like a personal space, it feels really invasive. And I think that's why it cuts, you know, because you were it's almost like it's in your home and it's happening, that attack. So I still struggle with it. But I think in a way it is nice, the rise of social media, because like you say, it does give people in the public eye that opportunity to have their own say, that platform, you know, whereas before we were potentially just a little bit beholden to whatever the Sun or whoever it was wanting to write about with.
Or beholden to the fact that you've been on a TV show for 3 minutes and that's the only takeaway that people have from you.
Whereas,
as I say, Vicky, you can control the narrative a bit more. And I think that's a great power to have. It's empowering, full stop, you know, to rein in the negative stuff and, you know, build on the positive, I think.
I agree. I will say one thing that I know has absolutely changed. Like, as somebody who is planning a wedding, right, I remember back in the day when, like, the Beckhams got a million off OK Mag for their wedding. And, like, I'm not for a single second suggesting myself and my fiancé or Victoria and David. But what I am saying is, like, when we were in talks with OK, I was like, oh, okay, things have very much changed financially, right? And I think this is, like, obviously sort of across the board. And pap pictures aren't going for what they used to. And, you know, stories aren't sort of, like, everything's just more difficult for magazines. I wondered if you could tell us what the biggest amount you ever heard a pap picture go for was.
Oh, my goodness me. Well, I suppose that's a completely different business from mine, because I've never, you know, worked for the tabloids apart from writing the odd column. So that's not really my level of expertise.
Have you ever heard a little cheeky rumor, though?
Obviously there are many rumors that circulate, you know, around big stars that they clearly set up a lot of these pap shots and stuff, and they're in cahoots with the paps and all that sort of thing. I mean, it's never been a road that I've gone down, but you really don't want to see me working out in a two-piece in my local square with my dog champing at the bit just because I'm about to vlog a fitness video, because I just don't think that would fly, mate. I mean, it goes on, obviously, but I couldn't even begin to tell you. I mean, I love it when I, and again, this is This is something that's never really changed. It's really interesting that you asked that question, because when Big Brother, Celebrity Big Brother, which is brilliant, by the way, launched a couple of weeks ago, all the chat was obviously about Sharon and how much money she was earning. And I remember Terry in makeup at GMB, by the way, I call Waking the Dead, because my God, those girls, you know, as they say, their hands are not wands, but they really do their best. You always know I've had a night out when Lisa in the makeup department puts a mint imperial in front of me. But it's like the chatter, like I say, we have on the sidebar, is the first thing Terry said to me, Richard, and Terry's worked in the business for years, is it true that Mrs. O is being paid, you know, 500 yeah. grand or whatever, you know? So people are kind of, and they always have been, obsessed with what people are paid in the public eye, how much they're earning. And I suppose case in point as well, you know, a new thing for me is obviously the influencers and stuff and how they earn a living. I have to show up to earn a living, but it's interesting to see that, you know, people make a living out of effectively not showing up. But then in itself, it's become a whole industry, because you've got to keep feeding that machine and you've got to get that content bang on. And so, frankly, I think they deserve the coin. But those figures I sort of find staggering. I mean, when you chat about the prizes that Pat Pictures go for, I mean, you used to hear rumours back in the day, particularly revolving around, you know, the royal family or bigger movie stars, I think. But yeah, I think as a nation, as human beings, everyone's always been obsessed with, as they call it in that movie, Death Becomes Her, the sordid topic of coin.
No, we are. I am. I'm so nosy. Honestly, I feel like, yeah, me and your mum would probably get on, basically.
No, my mum, speaking of money, she'd probably slip you a tenner and tell you to get an ice cream. You know, I mean, that's bless her heart. So I'm like, mum, it's not 10 banana. Quid for Mr. Whippy, even during the Cosy Libby crisis, mum. You're all right.
She's got proper lovely Nana vibes. I love her. Richard, I've absolutely loved talking to you in part one. We're going to have a cheeky little break. And in part two, we're going to get back to the nitty gritty.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.